Don't you fucking look at me like that.
My gaze jerks toward his. Okay, the words aren't the same, but the growly rasp is exactly what I'd heard in my head. Like what? I ask weakly. My pulse has gone from 0 to 1,000,000 in a split second, making my knees wobble.
You know what I'm talking about.
He hisses out a breath, and you need to stop it.
Stop what?
He groans, a frustrated animalistic groan that sends a bolt of heat between my legs before spreading outward to set every square inch of my skin on fire. I'm no longer feeling the cold. I could be buck naked in the Siberian tundra, and I'd still feel like I was going up in flames. I thought I'd known what lust felt like, but I was wrong.
Stop playing with my damn mind!
The words are tortured, shaky. One day you're flirting with me, the next you're cuddling with Hunter. Guilt pricks into me. Crap. I forgot about the night Hunter and I snuggled. Fitz knows about that?
One day you're calling us best friends. The next you're standing in front of me looking like you want my dick in your mouth.
My core clenches with an ache so powerful, I almost keel over. Oh my God, that is a visual I do not need right now. He shakes his head before dropping his gaze to his scuffed boots.
I don't like mind games, and I definitely don't like drama, he mutters.
Fitz, wearing his curls around my throat. What are you actually mad about right now? His jaw clenches tight. For a moment, I don't expect him to answer, but then he mumbles,
You could have gotten hurt in there.
Surprise jolts through me. That's what this is about? He was worried for my safety? But I didn't, I assure him. Trust me, I know how to handle myself. I'm scrappy.
I've noticed.
I shake my head irritably. Why couldn't you say that from the start? Summer, I don't like the idea of you getting hurt. There. Easy. Instead, you shout at me like a maniac, and then act like there's something wrong about me thinking you're hot when you're angry? Slowly, he lifts his head. I suck in a breath. He levels me with a hot, needy look that has me desperately squeezing my legs together. The throbbing is back. And it's worse now. Nobody has ever looked at me this way.
You think I'm hot when I'm angry?
Yes, I do. You were sexy shouting, and it got me going. So sue me, I glare at him. Just because you're not attracted to me doesn't mean I'm...
Not attracted to you.
He interrupts incredulously. And the next thing I know, he's snatching my hand and placing it directly on his crotch.
Feel this? This is what you do to me. You make me hard, constantly.
He presses my palm tighter to his body, and a moan gets stuck in my throat. I'm mesmerized by the thick ridge beneath my hand. He's impossibly big. I mean, I guess I expected it. He's a big guy, tall, muscular, huge shoulders, big hands. But that isn't always a reliable indication of wiener size. I dated a tight end once with bear paws and size 14 shoes and a teeny little ding-dong, the kind of penis that makes you cry real tears because it's so depressingly disappointing. Fitz? He doesn't disappoint. I wish I could wrap my fingers around him, put my mouth on him. But his stupid pants are on, so I settle for rubbing the tantalizing length of him, just slightly. And yet the fleeting contact is enough to summon a deep, tormented moan from his throat.
You think it's fun walking around with this damn thing all day long? You so much as breathe in my direction and you do this to me. You're on my mind 24/7.
But, I swallow, you think I'm fluff?
For fuck's sake, are we back to that? I only said that shit to Garrett because I was trying to convince myself not to get involved with you.
I falter. Really? I experience a burst of hope, until the last thing he said registers, bringing a flicker of hurt. My hand drops from his groin. Why didn't you want to get involved with me?
Because you drive me crazy. Wanting you is exhausting, Summer. Being around you is exhausting.
He throws his hands up before dragging them through his messy hair.
I'm an introvert, and you're the very definition of social and exhausting. Did I mention you're exhausting?
I frown. I don't...
Everything okay out here?
We both whirl around at the sound of Hunter's voice. Our roommate strides across the lot, my parka slung over one arm. He holds it out for me, and despite the heat still coursing through my blood, I take the coat and shrug it on. Thanks, I tell Hunter. And everything's fine. I'm dying to look at Fitz, but I'm afraid of what I'll see. He solves the dilemma for me by walking to his car.
Make sure Summer gets home safe, he says.
Not even a backwards glance. A moment later, his huge body disappears into the driver's seat. The engine sputters to life, and he peels out of the lot without even waiting 5 seconds to defrost his windshield. Tears sting my eyes. I blink hard and fast, but they still manage to break free. The adrenaline from the bar fight, both my fight and Fitz's, is suddenly sucked out of my body, as if someone stuck a vacuum hose on me. It leaves me feeling weary. Hunter draws me toward him, wrapping one arm around my shoulders.
Hey, don't cry, Blondie.
I bite my lip, blinking faster to ward off the tears. Sorry. Adrenaline crash, I think.
I get it.
There's humor in his tone.
I mean, you did kick someone's ass tonight.
Barely. His free hand reaches for one of mine. He lightly caresses the inside of my palm with his thumb.
That was so badass of you, by the way, defending Brenna like that.
At least someone thinks so. Thanks. He chuckles softly.
Though I'm pretty sure that catfight gave Mike enough spank bank material for at least a year.
I make a face. Oh, God. I hope not. Hunter's calloused fingers graze my palm before linking through mine. Holding his hand is both comforting and unsettling. But I don't have the strength to pull away. I'm currently using most of my energy to try to make sense of everything Fitz said before his abrupt departure. I drive him crazy. He finds me exhausting. He wants me, but he doesn't want to want me.
Blondie, Hunter says roughly.
Hmm? My mind continues to race, making it hard to concentrate. Or rather, making it harder to concentrate. My ADHD already gives me a handicap.
Next Saturday,
he starts. What about it?
We don't have a game.
He hesitates.
Do you want to go out that night? Grab some dinner?
It's my turn to hesitate. There's no mistaking his intentions. He's asking me on a date. And maybe if Fitz wasn't in the picture, I'd... Are you fucking kidding me right now? My inner Selena Gomez shrieks. Wow. A rare F-bomb from her. Inner Selena is usually far more proper and composed. She doesn't let the exasperating behavior of men affect her pure, elegant way of living her life. But she's absolutely right. I have one guy who doesn't want me, and another one who's proud to declare that he does. And I'm leaning toward the first one? Why? Really, why? Why is this even a choice? Hunter is gorgeous. He's a great kisser, and he's actually making an effort to be with me instead of running away every chance he gets. I like Fitz, but he's too confusing. He thinks I'm playing mind games? He's gone from telling Garrett he'd never date me, to comforting me about my midterm and offering to help me, to confessing he's attracted to me and then saying I'm too exhausting to be with. Uh-huh. I'm exhausting. I want a man with clear intentions, a man who makes an effort and is excited to spend time with me, a man who actually wants to want me. If he has to fight himself to be with me, then chances are he'd never fight for me, if it came down to it. What woman would ever choose somebody like that? I rest my head on Hunter's shoulder and allow the warmth of his body to seep into my tired bones. I squeeze his hand and say, I'd love to have dinner with you. 19. Summer. In the past, I've felt judged by my female friends. My circle in high school was super competitive, which inevitably led to trash-talking, backstabbing, and outright in-your-face betrayal. Even with the girls I, more or less, trusted, I'd tried not to share every aspect of my life. That's probably just a good rule to live by, though. Always keep part of yourself hidden. Fitz is very good at that, but he does it to the extreme. And me? I haven't mastered it completely. I'll still share certain personal details with my friends, like whether I kissed someone, who I'm interested in, whether I enjoyed or hated a date. But admitting that I went from essentially giving one guy an over-the-pants handjob to agreeing to go out with another one? No. If I'd confessed that to any of my high school friends or Brown sorority sisters, the slut rumors would already be traveling across campus. And don't get me started on all the sub-tweets and social media bullshit I'd have to deal with. Typically, I'd have no problem confiding in my mom, but this time I'm too embarrassed to confess what happened. How do I even phrase it? Hey, Mom, I put my hand on a guy's dick yesterday. Discuss. But for the first time in my life, I think I actually found a friend with whom I'm comfortable providing all the dirty little details that other friends would pass judgment on. I have the utmost confidence that Brenna can be trusted and won't try to make me feel bad about my actions in some catty, passive-aggressive way. So, I don't regret telling her everything. I do, however, regret telling her while we're sitting in public. "You touched Fitzy's dick?" she shouts. Awesome. I probably should have called her after it happened last night. But I needed to mull. And I was mulling this morning, too, and this afternoon. It wasn't until we arrived at the Briar Arena tonight that I decided I needed advice. Brenna and I don't even ask each other to go to home games anymore. We just assume that we are. Tonight I get to meet some of her friends, though, which I'm excited about. We're meeting them at Malone's for drinks after the game, and she's promised me they're really cool chicks. "Would you keep your voice down?" I order, looking around to make sure nobody is paying attention to us. "How on earth did that happen?" she demands. "You left the bar to check if he was okay after the fight. Did that require grabbing his junk? Was it under the boxers?" she gasps. "Was there sucking?" I choke on a wave of laughter. "Over the pants, and I told you, it was just touching. Maybe some rubbing." Her bottom lip sticks out. "So, no bare dick? No bare dick. Pity. I bet his bare dick is phenomenal." The girls in front of us titter, alerting me to the fact that we've uttered the phrase bare dick one too many times. The braver of the two looks over her shoulder at us, and I give her a sheepish smile. She smiles shyly in return. I think they're both freshmen. They still have that air of innocence to them. Beside me, Brenna lowers her voice. "How was it?" "It was intense. I meant size, Summer. How was the dick? Big, small, long, thick, happy, sad?" I bury my face in my lap, shaking with laughter. When I've calmed down, I ask, "How can a dick be sad? Trust me, I've seen some sad sausage." She waves a hand, flashing her red-painted nails. "Fine, we can discuss measurements later. What was intense about it?" "I don't know," I gulp as I recall the naked passion glittering in his eyes. "It just was. But then it got annoying." She frowns. "How so?" "He kept going on about how he wants me but doesn't want to want me. It was..." I think it over. "Insulting," I conclude. "I'll bet. You don't want Mr. Resistance. You want a guy who shouts from the rooftops how lucky he is to have you." "Exactly. I love that we're on the same page about this. I feel like too many girls fail to remember one vital truth. We deserve someone who gives us 100%. Half-assed effort isn't effort. Half-assed love isn't love. If a man isn't all in, then we need to be all out." So, yeah. It got weird, and then Hunter interrupted us, and Fitz drove off. I avoid her gaze. And then I agreed to go on a date with Hunter next Saturday. "On Valentine's Day? It's Valentine's Day?" My screech causes every single person in our vicinity to stare in our direction. Brenna quickly waves her hand again. "Nothing to see, folks. Enjoy the game," she chirps. Oh, my God.
Do you think he knew it was Valentine's Day when he asked me out? I hiss. I doubt it. Most guys don't pay attention to that kind of stuff.
She's right,
a familiar voice confirms. I turn in time to see Brooks Weston flopping down in an empty seat behind us. Jake Connolly is with him, lowering his broad body onto the neighboring seat. Jake's dark hair is swept away from his chiseled face, and I can't tell if it's windblown or slicked back with gel, but either way, it looks hot. Both guys wear hoodies conspicuously lacking the Harvard logo or colors. Because that's not suspicious. Sharing my thoughts, Brenna flicks a cagey glance at them. Scoping out the competition? Weston nods, unabashed.
Absolutely.
We play you again in a couple of weeks, he winks. Correction. We beat you again in a couple of weeks.
You wish. We've got home ice advantage, Brenna reminds him.
Weston simply grins. She glances at Jake. What about you? Don't feel like taunting us about how you're going to kick our asses? He cocks a brow.
We are going to kick your asses. I don't see the point in rubbing it in.
Jake focuses on me.
And to answer your question, I doubt he knew the date. V-Day isn't something we usually mark on our calendars unless we've got a girlfriend.
Girlfriend, Brenna echoes, her tone dry. From what I hear, you don't know the meaning of that word. The smile he gives her is seductive as hell.
You've been asking around about me.
Nope. Your puck bunnies just like to talk. She shrugs. Apparently you never go out with the same girl twice.
So?
Somehow he's able to inject cockiness, sheepishness, and pure sex into one measly syllable. I speak up before Brenna can. Do you think I should give him a heads up about what day it is? I ask the boys.
Depends,
Connolly replies. On what? I've completely abandoned the game being played on the rink below us. I twist around in my seat, desperate for some male advice. Jake licks his bottom lip. I'm not sure if it's intentional or if his lips are dry. But again, looks hot either way. It's a bit alarming, this strange fascination I have with this guy. I don't want him for myself, but I'm wholly aware of the sex appeal he radiates. Maybe I'm feeding off Brenna's energy? Despite her constant mocking of him, I've noticed that her gaze always lingers on him a bit longer than necessary.
Depends on whether you want to fuck him or not, Jake explains.
True, Weston agrees.
If you want to bang him, don't tell him. Chances are he'll bail if he knows the date. Unless you want him to bail?
I don't know, I confess. There's no denying that Hunter is incredibly attractive. He's easy to talk to, he makes me laugh, turns me on. But Fitz does something to my stomach. Saying he gives me butterflies would be an understatement, and he does something to my heart, too. Damned if I can tell you what that something is, but rest assured, he does it for me. Crap. Maybe agreeing to go out with Hunter was a mistake. Here I am preaching about deserving someone who gives me 100%. Well, doesn't Hunter deserve the same? As long as Fitz is on my mind, even if he's only taking up a teeny corner of it, is it fair of me to date someone else? I don't say this out loud because I don't want to reveal to these Harvard guys that I'm torn between my two roommates, but deep down I suspect there's not much of a competition there. I wanted Fitz from the moment I met him last year. I think those might actually be the first words I spoke to Dean's girlfriend. I pointed at Fitz and said, I want him. And this isn't about me being a spoiled brat and needing a shiny new toy. Fitz isn't a pair of Louboutin pumps or a Valentino clutch. And it's not about me wanting him simply because he's been making me chase him. And while it may have begun as a physical kind of wanting, that's changed. I think I might want more now. Fuck. The game is surprisingly low scoring. We're playing Eastwood, our conference rival, and they're damn good at keeping the puck out of their zone. Whenever the Briar guys cross the blue line, they need to take full advantage of the opportunity, and they haven't been doing it so far in the first two periods. Plus, Eastwood has this goon on their team that's driving me nuts. He's already instigated several scrums, but nothing to warrant the attention of the refs.
Man after my own heart,
Weston cracks from behind us. He says this after the goon once again gets a few good shoves in on a briar player before skating away.
Figures you'd fall in love. A goon always recognizes the goon in another,
Brenna says sweetly. Weston reaches out and ruffles her hair good-naturedly.
I wear my goon badge with pride, babe.
On the ice, the Eastwood goon just stole the puck from Matt Anderson after slamming the defenseman against the boards. He takes possession and flies toward our net, his teammates skating fast in tow.
Ugh, I hate this guy!
Annoyance has me jumping to my feet.
Go away!
I shout at him. Nobody wants you here! Jake and Brenna snort in unison. They frown at each other as if any sort of united reaction is unacceptable.
Weston taps the back of my knee. Hey, you know who that is, right?
No, I can't see his jersey number or his name. I just know I hate him.
It's Casper Cassidy, from Greenwich Prep, he replies, naming the high school that my brother Dean attended.
I went to Greenwich for a freshman year, but I transferred to Roselawn because I couldn't handle the workload. Greenwich places a lot more importance on academics than Roselawn does. In fact, in the prep school circuit, Roselawn has a prep for being a party school. The kids are rich enough to buy their way into college, so nobody is too concerned about getting straight A's. Despite the fact that my dad pulled strings to get me into Briar, I'm at least proud to say I was admitted to Brown all on my own. My GPA wasn't something to write home about, but I made up for it with my extracurriculars and community service.
Are you kidding me?
I marvel, trying to spot the goon again.
There are too many jerseys battling it out behind the net. That's Casper Cassidy? Did he have some sort of growth spurt? He looks enormous.
No, he was always that big,
Weston argues. I twist in my seat again.
I played 7 minutes in heaven with him at a Greenwich party, and he fingered me in a closet. Trust me, he was not that big.
Connolly starts to laugh.
You're really something else, De Laurentiis. No filter whatsoever.
He tips his head.
Doesn't embarrass you at all to admit that, huh?
Nope. Why should she be embarrassed? Brenna challenges.
What? You don't think girls are allowed to hook up?
Jake's mouth hitches in a wry grin.
Jensen, I think no matter what I say, you'd still argue the point.
That's not true.
You're arguing right now.
Because you're annoying me.
What a coincidence,
he mocks.
You're annoying me too.
A collective gasp from the crowd interrupts their bickering. I'd turned away so I'm not certain what happened, but I stumble to my feet when I glimpse the blood.
Oh shit, that's Fitz. Brenna says, what the hell happened?
I guess she hadn't been watching either. The freshmen in the row ahead help us out.
He took a shot to the face,
one girl says.
What?
My heart jumps to my throat.
He laid out to block Cassidy's shot,
Weston explains.
Puck was deflected.
But he's wearing a visor, I protest.
Visor's probably what cut him,
Jake says wryly.
He's fine, Weston says. Doesn't look too bad.
Now that the whistle has been blown and the players have skated away from the net, I can clearly see the red drops staining the white surface. It's not as much blood as I thought, but still. My panicked gaze seeks out Fitz. He's on the briar bench. His head is being tipped back by a woman I assume is the team doctor. She's pressing a square of gauze to the outer edge of his right eyebrow. Not his eye, then. Relief flows through me. Fitz is arguing with the doc. His mouth is moving and his body practically vibrates with frustration. He wants to go back on the ice, but the woman keeps shaking her head. She readjusts the gauze, and my stomach churns when I glimpse the river of blood pouring down the side of his face.
He needs stitches, Brenna says unhappily.
Fitz flings a gloved hand toward the scoreboard. I assume to point out the game clock. There are 8 minutes left in the third. Clearly, he's determined to keep playing. The doc once again shakes her head, unyielding. Then Coach Jensen shouts something at them, and Fitz stands up. With my heart still lodged in my throat, I watch as he's ushered away. He slams an angry glove against the boards before disappearing in the tunnel that leads to the locker rooms. I'm already marching toward the aisle.
Later, spies,
I call to the Harvard boys. To Brenna, I issue a sharp order. Come on, B. I expect her to object, insist we need to watch the rest of the game, but she surprises me by following me down the steps. Outside the rink doors, I gaze imploringly at her. Can you sneak me into the locker room? Or the medical room? Whatever you call it. I want to make sure he's okay. She nods, her eyes softening. Sure, I've got you. In the hallway, she takes the lead, while I scramble to keep up with her brisk pace. When we reach a door that requires a key card, Brenna whips one out of her purse and holds it to the scanner. It turns green and off we go. Being the coach's daughter comes with perks, apparently. The doctor who'd been arguing with Fitz exits the locker room at the same time we approach it. Hey, Alex, Brenna greets her. How's Fitzy? Physically, he's fine. I stitched him up. The woman, Alex, rubs the bridge of her nose. She's visibly aggravated, but his attitude could use an adjustment. Your dad said he's done for the night. Brenna nods. Makes sense. We're ahead by two, she gestures to me. You mind if Summer pops in to see him? Alex scrutinizes me for a moment. She's a short, stocky woman with sharp features and a narrow jaw. But there's kindness in her eyes. Finally, she nods. Be quick, she tells me. To Brenna, she says, if your father asks, I never saw either of you. You rock, Alex. Once the team doc disappears around the corner, Brenna gives me a cheeky grin. I'll stand out here and keep watch. If someone comes, I'll hoot like an owl. I swallow a laugh. Solid plan, I reply, reaching for the door handle. When I enter the locker room, I find it completely empty. No Fits, only sleek benches, padded lockers, and a faint whiff of sweat and old socks. In all honesty, the room smells a hell of a lot better than other locker rooms I've been in. Breyer's hockey facility boasts the kind of ventilation system other teams probably have wet dreams about. The sound of rushing water captures my attention. I glance toward the wide doorway across the room. Wisps of steam float out of it. But I don't see any light. There's nothing but darkness beyond that doorway. Fitz, I say warily. A beat. Two. Then his equally wary, albeit muffled, voice replies with, Summer? Yeah, it's me. I'm coming in, okay? I cross the threshold and am greeted by a cloud of steam. It takes a second for my eyes to adjust to both the darkness and the haze, for me to make out the bulky figure in the stall nearest the door. I'm not sure why I don't turn on the light. I guess because he didn't. If he wants to take a shower in the dark, who am I to stop him? I inch my way toward the stall. In the shadows, I glimpse the swirl of his tats and the ridges of his abs. Cotton fills my mouth when it occurs to me that he's naked. The only barrier between Fitz's naked body and myself is a short swinging door. All I have to do is nudge that partition, and I'd get an eyeful of, "What are you doing in here?" His gruff voice interrupts my thoughts. I wanted to make sure you're all right. How's the eye? Fine, he grunts. He turns the shower off and steps toward the little door. My heart rate triples. Water drips down his bare chest, rippling over his tattoo and trickling between his defined pecs. One muscular arm reaches out, and I forget how to breathe. Is he reaching for the towel on the hook behind my head? Yes, he certainly is. I gulp hard, hoping to bring some moisture to my arid mouth. Fitz wraps the towel around his waist and exits the stall, but rather than go into the other room, he stays put. We stand there in the darkness, facing each other. The air is still hot and muggy from the steam, but now it's also thick with tension. The sexual kind. The, holy shit, this guy is looking at me like he's already inside me, kind. I try to ease backward, but my knees knock together. I honestly didn't think it through when I decided to check on him. He'd just left the ice in the middle of a fast-paced, demanding game. He's in pain because he took a puck to the face. He's probably still hopped up on adrenaline. He's dangerous. I don't fear for my safety, but I fear for my sanity. Shadows dance across his masculine features. I catch a glimpse of his tongue dragging over his bottom lip, long fingers scraping over his wet hair. Then he speaks in a gravelly voice that sends a hot shiver up my spine.
You should leave.
My pulse hammers in my throat. It's all I hear, the relentless thump, thump of my heart. What if I don't? I find myself asking, and we both hear the breathy note in each word. He moves closer, slowly, deliberately, until he's completely backed me up against the tiled wall.
If you don't go, then I'll probably kiss you,
he says bluntly. My mouth is so dry I can't answer him. I swallow once, twice. It's pointless, though. There's nothing to swallow. No saliva, just the sawdust that's cutting my throat. My heart beats even faster. I swear it's going to give out on me any second. He dips his head, and his next words rumble in my ear, low and silky.
What do you think, Summer? You want me to kiss you?
It's the sexiest question I've ever heard in my life, voiced by the sexiest guy I've ever met in my life. I find the strength to lift my head so I can meet his eyes. It's too dark to fully make out his expression, but I don't need to. I know exactly what he's feeling right now. I'm feeling it, too. Hot, uncontrollable lust.
Yes or no,
he whispers. I finally find my voice. Yes.
20. Fitz. I'm gone for this girl. So gone. I should be urging her to leave the locker room. My teammates could come barreling in at any second. There wasn't much time left in the third period before Doc Alex forced me to leave the ice so she could stitch me up. But although common sense tells me this isn't a good idea, I'm helpless to stop it. My surroundings disappear. When I inhale, I breathe in nothing but Summer and Chanel number 5. Fuck it, I need this too much. She needs it too, otherwise she wouldn't have said yes. I curl one hand over the back of her neck and thrust the other one through her hair. It feels like silk between my fingers.
Colin,
she whispers, and the sound of my name on her lips is what spurs me to action. I lower my head and press my lips to hers, and she makes the sweetest sound in the world, a soft, desperate moan. Then she deepens the kiss, and it's my turn to moan. When our tongues meet, I feel like I've been struck by a taser gun. A jolt of electricity sizzles right down to my dick, fries my brain, makes my hands shake. She tastes like cola and mint, and her lips are so damn soft. We stand there in the dark, her tongue in my mouth, my fingers in her hair. One of her legs comes up and hooks around my waist, and I don't know if it's intentional or not, but her foot nudges the edge of my towel, causing the terry cloth to slide to the floor. Her mouth abruptly leaves mine.
Your dick's out,
she informs me. I choke on a laugh.
Yep. Cool.
Humor colors her tone.
Just making sure you know.
Our gazes lock as she flattens one palm against my bare chest. Meanwhile, my hard-on is impossible to ignore. It's like a sharp sword between us, poking her in the belly. Her fingertips drift lower, only an inch, hovering over my abs. Despite the steam still hanging in the air, I shiver. Her hand stops moving.
Are you cold?
No, I say thickly. I'm enjoying her slow, torturous exploration of my chest. Delicate fingers caress my abdominal muscles before skimming even lower.
Remember the night we met?
She murmurs.
When I teased you about showing me your dick?
A laugh slips out. How could I forget? Her head slants, sending her silky hair cascading over one shoulder.
You said you don't go around showing it to just anyone.
I don't.
So I'm special?
Very much so. Her fingers wrap around the base of my aching cock. The instant she makes contact, a shudder rolls through me, and moisture forms at my tip. Jesus, I'm leaking. That's how turned on I am. She slides her hand up and down a few times. And then she actually tugs me forward by the dick and crushes her lips against mine again. I grunt, thrusting into her closed fist. My tongue fills her mouth, and we exchange the hottest kiss I've ever experienced. Once again, I'm lost in the fog. I'm lost in her. I barely feel the pain in my eye anymore. Right now, I'm kissing Summer, and she's stroking my cock, and I'm in frickin' heaven. When I drag my hands up her body to cup her tits over her thin V-neck sweater, I promptly lose the ability to think straight. Even through her bra, I can feel her nipples, hard little buds that make my mouth tingle with need. I've always been a boob guy, and I desperately wish I was sucking and nibbling on her tits. The fantasy has me groaning loudly against her lips. She strokes me faster, and just when I think it couldn't feel any better, she pushes my hands away and sinks to her knees.
Let me make you feel good.
I gaze down, but it's hard to see her expression. It's too dark. But I feel every last sensation when her warm, wet mouth engulfs me. Oh, fuck. I grind out. She sucks me all the way to the root, then licks her way back up. Her tongue teases my tip before gliding along the underside of my shaft, and I almost black out. God. Fuck, that's good. Her answering moan vibrates all around me. I swear I feel it in my toes. She takes me deeper and sucks harder, pumping me with her hand while she torments me with her tongue. In the back of my mind, I hear alarm bells. Stop this, they warn. But stopping is impossible when Summer's blonde head is moving up and down on my dick. My fingers tangle in her hair, but I don't seize control. I let her go at her own pace, trusting that she'll get me where I need to be. And she does. As the suction tightens and her pace quickens, my balls throb and the tip of my dick tingles, and then I'm there. Coming. I choke out. She doesn't release me. I bite the side of my thumb to stop from groaning out loud as I rock my hips and shoot in her mouth. She swallows every drop while I shudder in pleasure bordering on pain. When Summer rises to her feet, I pull her close and rest my chin on her shoulder, still shaking from that climax. I needed that. I say hoarsely.
I know you did.
She plants a kiss between my pecs and brings her hand back to my dick, petting it softly. I break out in shivers.
You're killing me.
Her laughter tickles my collarbone.
Sorry, I just really like touching you.
She pauses.
I should probably go.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
I don't want you to. I feel her trembling as she kisses me again, this time the fleeting brush of her lips over my shoulder.
What just happened here, Fitz?
You blew my dick and my mind, I almost say. But I know what she means. She wants to know what this means. I...
Ooh, 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 ooh.
My head snaps up in alarm. Was that an owl?
Oh, shit.
Summer blurts out.
That's the signal.
Signal?
Yeah, Brenna is in the hall. I asked her to keep an eye out and make sure nobody catches me in here.
She's barely finished speaking when we hear the voices and the footsteps. A lot of voices and a lot of footsteps. My teammates are coming down the tunnel. Summer snatches my fallen towel off the ground and hurriedly wraps it around my waist. Her fingers brush my dick and I swallow a groan. I'm still hard. I take a breath and nod to a doorway on the far end of the showers. The PT room is in there, it leads to the coach's offices, and there's another exit to the arena from there. The footsteps grow louder, accompanied by animated male voices and raucous laughter. My teammates sound happy, which means we won. Summer, I say when she doesn't move. You gotta go, and you better do it fast before the boys get in here and start pulling their dicks out. She hesitates.
We need to finish this conversation.
We will. I promise. At home. Her teeth dig into her lip.
Brenna and I are meeting friends at the bar.
Then we'll talk at the bar. Or afterward. Right now, you need to go. Summer nods. She stands on her tiptoes, gives me a kiss on the cheek, and then she's gone. I'm a pussy. I don't go looking for Summer after the game, and I don't go to Malone's. I also don't go home. Like an asshole, I get in my car and drive to Boston. My friend Tucker bought a bar in the city this past fall. I helped him with the reno, getting it ready for its big opening in November. Doesn't surprise me that the only person I want to confide in right now is Tuck. He's easy to talk to and has a good head on his shoulders. Gives really smart advice, too, and right now I'm desperate for some advice. I'm reaching the freeway exit when my phone rings. My car is an older model and doesn't have the Bluetooth feature, so I'm forced to use speakerphone. If it wasn't my mother's number flashing on the screen, I'd probably press ignore. But ignoring Mom is never a good idea.
Colin, sweetie, are you all right?
Her greeting holds a hefty dose of concern. I'm fine, why wouldn't I be?
Your Uncle Randy was at your game tonight and he just sent me a phone picture of your face.
You can just say picture, Ma, you don't have to specify phone.
But he sent it from his phone to my phone.
Yes, but I stop myself from continuing. Pick your battles, man. My mother isn't an old lady and therefore has no excuse for her total lack of knowledge about anything tech-related, but she's also set in her ways and arguing with her is pointless. She still uses a BlackBerry, for Christ's sake. I promise I'm fine, got stitched up, and now I'm good as new.
How many stitches?
Only two.
Okay.
The worry leaves her tone. Unfortunately, it's replaced with anger.
This is all your father's fault.
Here we go again. How do you figure? I don't know why I'm playing along. I already know the answer.
Because he forced you into hockey.
He didn't force me. I love hockey. I may as well be speaking to my car windshield.
What a selfish prick that man is.
She gripes.
Come on, Colin. You don't think it's pathetic that a grown man is trying to live vicariously through his son?
My jaw tenses. No use in asking her to stop, though, or vice versa. The pair of them never stop. In other news, I say in an attempt to steer the topic into safe territory, my job interview went well.
You had an interview?
She sounds startled. Yep. I quickly fill her in on Kamal Jane as I get off the freeway and stop at a set of red lights. I guess he'll make his decision after this fundraiser thing in New York.
There's no decision to be made. You're clearly the best candidate.
She replies with the kind of unshakable confidence only a mother can feel toward her son. Thanks, Ma. I turn onto the street that houses Tuck's bar and click my blinker to claim the last available parking spot at the curb. I just got to my buddy's and need to parallel park. I'll call you later this week.
Sounds good. I love you.
Does she? Sometimes I wonder. Love you too. We hang up and I experience the same sense of overwhelming relief as when I got off the phone with my father last week. I hop out of the car and glance at the neon signs lighting the front of Tucker's bar. And there's actually a line at the door. Business is obviously booming. Good for Tuck. As I approach the sidewalk, I send him a quick text. Me. Dude, I'm outside your bar. Not gonna make me freeze my nuts off in this line, are ya? Three dots appear as he types a response. Tuck. I'm upstairs, come up. And for future, tell Bouncer your name and he'll let you in. You're on the perma guest list. Sweet. I'm a VIP. I bypass the front door and walk to the side of the building, where a narrow door buzzes open the moment I reach it. I know Tuck is staring at me on a camera right now. I helped him set up the system, which he can control entirely from his smartphone. It makes it easier to get in and out of this place. Plus, he takes security seriously. His baby girl and baby mama are the most important things in the world to him. Hey, I say when I reach the second floor loft. Tuck greets me with baby Jamie on his hip.
Yeah!
She shrieks when she sees me. I can honestly say she's one of the most beautiful babies I've ever seen. The kid belongs in diaper commercials and on baby food jars. She inherited the best of both her parents, who are disgustingly attractive to begin with, especially Sabrina. Jamie's pink rosebud mouth opens, and she gives me a huge gummy smile. Her arms flail in my direction. Tuck sighs. She's such a little attention seeker. I don't mind. I hold out my arms, and the six-month-old practically somersaults into them. She's gotten so big, man. I know. Swear to God, I turn around for 5 seconds and I look back and she's doubled in size. Jamie wiggles happily in my arms, her chubby hands instantly seeking out the stubble on my face. She loves textures and is fascinated by colors. The last time I saw her, she was in total awe of my tats.
Are you sure you don't mind that I stopped by?
I ask as he shuts and locks the front door.
Of course not. You're welcome here anytime, man.
Where's Sabrina?
Study group.
So late? It's almost 10 o'clock. Yep, that woman works her butt off. Deep pride resonates in his voice. Sabrina is in law school, and truth be told, I have no idea how she manages to be a mom while studying to be a lawyer. Fortunately, she and Tuck have help. His mother moved up here from Texas in December. Apparently, she lives in an apartment a few blocks away. How's your mom liking Boston? She hates the cold with all her heart. I grin. I imagine that February in Texas is a tropical paradise compared to these frigid New England winters. But her place has a gorgeous view of the Charles. She says it's pretty to look at, and she gets to see her granddaughter whenever she wants to. So she's happy. We all are. Sounds like you've got a good arrangement going on. Tucker nods. He looks so blissed out as he stares at his daughter, who's still running her teeny fingers all over my chin. She squeals every time she encounters a stubbly whisker. Want a beer? He offers. Sure, but just one. I'm driving back tonight. We've only got cans. Jamie's really grabby lately, and she knocks shit off the counters when we walk by. I've had to pick up broken glass enough times that we just decided, fuck it, we're a beer can family now. Cans are fine, I assure him. Still holding the baby, I accept the can of Peak IPA, and we wander over to the couch. The apartment features an open concept layout with the living room on one side, kitchen on the other, and dining area in the far corner. Floor-to-ceiling windows offer a decent view of the small playground across the street, and a hallway off the dining room leads to the bedrooms. I help Tuck renovate one of those rooms into a nursery for Jamie, and as I settle on the couch cushions and reposition her in my lap, I wonder why she's not currently in that nursery. Shouldn't she be asleep? I was getting ready to feed her. Actually, she was screaming her lungs out about 30 seconds before you got here. She literally just settled. Liar. This beautiful angel could never scream her lungs out. I retort as I tickle one of Jamie's socked feet. Look at how sweet and calm she is. Jamie chortles in delight. Fuck off. She's acting sweet and calm because we've got company. She's a little terror in real life, aren't you, darling? The baby gazes at her father with pure adoration. Tuck immediately caves. I take it back, he tells his daughter. You're not a terror. Fitz, entertain the princess while I prep her bottle. That's no hardship. I bounce Jamie on my knee and tickle her tummy over her pink onesie while she makes the cutest noises. Damn, this kid is freaking cute. So what's going on? Tucker calls from the kitchen. It's not like you to show up out of the blue, especially on game night. That shot to your eye looked brutal, by the way. You saw it? Yeah, I was flipping between your game and Garrett's. His is still on, second period. G's playing tonight? I look over at the TV, but a commercial for laundry detergent is flashing on the screen. Yeah, he has a series of road games coming up, playing L.A. tonight. What's the score? 2-2. G's looking good. One of those goals his? No, one assist, though. Sweet. I'm thrilled for the success Garrett's been having in his rookie season with Boston. He's so frickin' talented, and he also happens to be a genuinely decent guy. A bit cocky, sure. Definitely a smartass. But he's got a big heart, and he's a good friend. Damn it, Fitz. Tuck's southern drawl rears its head as he chastises me. You managed to distract me again. Why aren't you celebrating tonight's W at Malone's? I shrug. Wasn't in the mood for people. Okay, then why aren't you at home? Because one of my roommates gave me a BJ tonight and I don't know how to act around her. It's complicated. I keep my gaze on the top of Jamie's head. Dean's sister lives with us now. I heard. Tucker's tone is cautious. How's that working out? Well, she gave me a BJ tonight and I don't know how to act around her. Pretty good. I keep my own tone vague and smatter kisses on Jamie's soft cheek, making her giggle again. But it isn't long before my baby shield is taken away from me. You ready, little one? Tuck drawls. Mama pumped this yummy goodness out just for you. I snort loudly. At the sight of the bottle, Jamie's face lights up. A few moments later, she's sucking happily on a nipple. With a pillow propped under his elbow and a contented baby in his arms, Tuck grins at me. She's still into you? He asks. Jamie? Yeah, she loves me. He rolls his eyes. I'm talking about Summer De Laurentiis. I remember last winter she had a thing for you. Is that still the case?
Yep.
I see. He looks like he's trying not to smile. What about you? Do you return the sentiment? After a reluctant beat, I dip my head in assent. His smile breaks free. Then what's the problem? You worried about how Dean's going to react? No, I puff out another breath. I don't know if I want to go there. Then you probably shouldn't have let her blow you tonight. Maybe not, but clearly I don't possess any control when it comes to Summer. She makes me do the most uncharacteristic things. Well, she doesn't make me, it just happens. I let her blow me in the locker room, for Christ's sake. Anyone could have walked in on us. And for a dude who hates PDA, drama, and attention, a public hookup definitely doesn't top my bucket list. And it's funny, because wasn't I telling myself the other night that if Summer was throwing herself at me, then I'd be challenging Hunter's claim to her? Well, there's no misinterpreting her intentions toward me anymore. I haven't been friend-zoned. Her actions tonight proved that. But rather than stake a claim, I ran away. I drag both hands through my hair, which is getting too long for my liking. I prefer it out of my eyes when I'm drawing. Hunter has a thing for her, too. I tell Tuck. Oh. Yeah, and she kissed him on New Year's. His reddish brows shoot upward. Oh? But tonight... I stop. Tonight what? She showed up in the locker room after I got stitched up and we kissed. I pause. And maybe a bit more. Define more? She sucked my dick in the showers. Tucker jerks in surprise, and the nipple pops out of Jamie's mouth. She squawks in outrage.
Oh, I'm sorry, baby girl,
he croons.
It's okay, keep eating. Daddy was being a big doodlehead.
A doodlehead? I snicker. Oh, shush, you're an even bigger doodlehead. You hear that, little one? Your Uncle Fitzy is the king of the doodleheads. He nudges her lips with the bottle's nipple, and she latches on again. Then he frowns at me. This happened tonight? I nod. And instead of sticking around to talk to the girl who sucked, his gaze drops to his daughter. He promptly rephrases. The girl who did stuff to your body, you came here instead. Guilt sears into me. Fuck, I'm such an ass. That beautiful, amazing girl knelt on wet, uncomfortable tile for me tonight and rocked my world. I should be blowing up her phone with apologies right now. To Tucker, I manage a quick nod. I never took you for a coward. I'm not usually one, I say gruffly. Tucker grabs a small blue cloth from the end table and wipes the corner of Jamie's mouth where a bit of milk has drizzled out. He gazes at her with so much love that I actually feel a spark of envy. I wonder what it's like to love somebody that much. I don't know how to handle this, Tuck. Summer wants to talk about us, I'm assuming, and I have no clue what to say to her. A crease appears in his forehead. You don't know how to let her down, you mean? Are you saying you don't want to be with her? My teeth dig into my cheek. Not sure about that either. She's too much, man. Too much, he repeats. What does that mean? She's too... everything. A helpless sensation tightens my throat. She's too beautiful, she's got too much energy, she's too open. I let out a groan. Everybody is drawn to her. Everybody. She walks into a room and all eyes instantly home in on her. And not simply because she's hot. Summer's one of those girls, the high-profile ones who attract attention. She can't help it. It's her orbit. You get sucked into it. And that's bad because I've never been so drawn to anyone, and it kind of scares the shit out of me. Because I don't want to be a high-profile guy, I say instead. Tuck wouldn't understand this fear I have about Summer. Emotions don't scare him. He knew he wanted to be with Sabrina from the second he met her, and his certainty that they belonged together and relentless pursuit to win her heart were damn near incomprehensible to me. Being with someone like her means putting myself in the spotlight, and there'll always be some kind of drama. The other night she started a bar fight. I grumble. Summer doesn't know the meaning of the word low-key. Everything she does is over the top, flashy, extravagant. That's not me. No, he agrees, before offering a dry smile. But letting a chick go down on you in the locker room isn't typical of you either, so...
You must like her a hell of a lot if you took that kind of risk tonight. He's right. Stifling a groan, I drop my head in my hands for a long, torturous moment. I'm in her orbit, man. I mumble into my palms. He chuckles. So what you gonna do about it? I lift my head. I have no fucking idea.
21. Summer. So I guess nobody talks about oral sex anymore. We just perform it on each other and hand out orgasms willy-nilly and it never gets discussed again. Is this the world we're living in? If so, I'm going off the grid. I'll build a shack in the middle of the woods where there isn't a penis in sight. Forest animals have penises, Summer. Oh, shut up, Selena, I mumble. I love you, but I don't need this today. My roommate Ben glances at me and sighs, and then returns his gaze to the front of the lecture hall. He's grown accustomed to my cat lady ramblings. I'm not certain if that's a good thing or a bad one. It's been 2 days since the locker room incident, and Fitz has been completely MIA. Gone in the afternoons, holed up in the painting studio, according to Hollis, hasn't had dinner, or any meals, for that matter, at home, and both nights he's come back around midnight and proclaimed to be so tired when I tried to talk to him. You know what I have to say to that? Fuck you very much, Colin Fitzgerald. That's the last time his dumb penis goes anywhere near my sacred mouth. A girl's got to have standards. Brenna echoes that sentiment when I text her after class with a Fitz update. Me. Still no mention of the BJ. Last night he said he had a migraine and locked himself in his room. This morning he left for practice at 5 a.m. Snuck out like a thief in the night. Brenna. Men are garbage. Me. They're pure trash. Brenna. Trash garbage. I send her the poop emoji. Because I can't find a garbage bag emoji, and poop is an adequate alternative. Brenna. All seriousness, I'm sorry, GB. Never thought Fitz was trash garbage, but people are full of surprises. Me. So are dumpsters. Brenna. LOLOLOLOLOL. I grin to myself as I slide my phone into my tote. The Prada bag smells like delicious new leather. A scent that never fails to cheer me up. It showed up on my doorstep yesterday morning courtesy of UPS and Nana Celeste. I swear that woman can sense whenever her grandbabies are upset. It's like she possesses internal radar that shouts, "Quick, call Prada," if one of the grandkids so much as gets a paper cut. Not that I'm complaining about my gorgeous new tote. I'm not a crazy person. I descend the steps toward Lori's lecture podium. It's not his office hours, but he agreed to see me after the lecture, so I could start writing my midterm today instead of waiting till Wednesday for him to approve my thesis. And the good thing about Eric Laurie teaching history of fashion, as well as serving as my independent study advisor, is that I'm able to kill two birds with one stone. I can get my thesis greenlit and give him an update on my swimwear line in one shot. I still can't quite explain it, but the man continues to creep me out. Everyone else adores him, especially the girls. They laugh at all his jokes. They tolerate his winking disorder. And then there's me, who leaves every encounter with him feeling like I need a shower. He reminds me of that intolerable character from Harry Potter, Gilderoy Lockhart, only the film version of him that Kenneth Branagh knocked out of the park. Laurie isn't as flamboyant, but like Lockhart, he comes off as a vain egomaniac who wants everyone to love him. Or rather, who assumes they already do. I know it's a harsh assessment, and I try to push it out of my mind as I approach my professor. Winter, he teases. I enjoyed your thoughts in class today. Thanks. He shuffles a few papers, then glances beyond my shoulder and nods at someone. I turn and realize Nora is waiting a discreet distance away. There's another student I need a progress report from, so this will be quick, he informs me. Thank God, the quicker the better. He reads over my thesis for the midterm, suggests two minor tweaks, and signs off on it. Once that's out of the way, I fill him in on the fabric order I placed. The fashion department has a decent selection of free fabrics for students to use, but we're also able to buy our own if we choose to do so. Since several of my bikini tops are crochet, I had to order a more lightweight yarn that doesn't stretch or shrink if it gets wet. Lori approves of the choice, nodding in agreement when I explain the reasoning behind it. I conclude by giving him an update on the models I plan to recruit. He throws his head back in laughter when I mention I'd like to ask some football players to model the men's line.
That's a great idea, Summer. That'll definitely sell some tickets. And for the women's pieces?
I'm not sure yet. He winks.
So you haven't changed your mind about modeling one of the swimsuits yourself?
Ugh. Why? Just why, Gilderoy? I force a laugh.
Nope, still not interested. What a shame. All right, let's touch base at the end of the week.
He rests his hand on my shoulder before giving it a light squeeze. And either I imagine it, or his fingertips graze the nape of my neck when I turn to walk away. Disgust crawls up my spine. It takes a serious effort not to Usain Bolt out of the lecture hall. Instead, I move at a normal pace and act as if I'm not completely repulsed by the potential neck raise.
Nora, I'll be with you in a minute,
Lori tells her, stepping away to answer a call on his cell. He's all yours, I murmur to Nora. She makes a sardonic noise under her breath. Doesn't look that way from where I'm standing. I turn to frown at her. What's that supposed to mean? She checks to make sure Lori is still on the phone before sniping. Don't you get tired of using your looks to get ahead? What are you talking about? I'm not using anything. You've got Lori wrapped around your little finger. He drools every time you walk in the room. He acts like every word you say is worthy of a Pulitzer. I swear if he wasn't already on his feet, he'd give you a standing ovation every time you opened your mouth. I clench my jaw so tight my teeth start to hurt. It's not like I'm asking him to do that. I'm actually interested in the material we're discussing. I'm sure you are. She rolls her eyes, tucking a strand of pink-streaked hair behind her ear. Maybe if you spent less time flirting and more time learning, you wouldn't have gotten kicked out of your last school. Uh-huh. Have a good day, Nora. My hands are trembling as I stalk off. She is such a nasty person. I can't believe Fitz liked her enough to go out with her. I wonder if she gave him a blowjob, and he ignored her afterward, too. The reminder floods my belly with the heat of embarrassment. Sexual acts don't generally embarrass me, not even the ones in high school that occurred when I wasn't quite sober. But Fitz has made it this way for me. By not even acknowledging that it happened, he's caused me to feel like there's something shameful about what we did. I try to push the negative thoughts from my mind as I exit the building. Once again, it's cold outside. I swear February's even chillier than January. But at least it's shorter. Still, I don't know how much longer I can take this. I might skip out for a week and fly to our place in St. Bart's, write my essay while lying on a beach chair and sipping piña coladas. Actually, not a bad idea. On the walk to my car, I scroll through my phone contacts. I really do need to secure my models. I require 12 bodies, 6 males, 6 females. Brenna would laugh in my face if I asked her to put on a bikini and strut down a runway. But I do know some girls who might say yes. My Kappa sisters, or rather, former sisters. But that's semantics. Sorority girls crave attention, and most of them have no issue with skimpy clothing. Besides, I have a feeling Bianca might agree out of guilt alone. I think she genuinely felt bad about the way Kaya handled the whole living situation last month. I don't have Bianca's number, so I pull up my profile on MyBri, the college social network. She's not on my friends list, but you don't have to be friends with someone to message them. I send a quick note explaining what I need, then close the app. For the men, I hadn't been kidding about the football player angle. Nobody wants to see Speedos and swim trunks on scrawny guys with their ribs and hip bones jutting out. Gotta have the abs, baby. I call my brother, who actually answers, despite it being the middle of the school day. Hey, I greet Dean. You're not teaching a class?
Snow day,
he replies. Aw, it's snowing over there. We got a few flurries this morning, but it's cleared up. I pray that whatever blizzard has hit New York doesn't decide to pop over to Massachusetts.
Yeah, the weather's shit here. What's up, boogers? What do you need?
Are you still friends with any of the Briar football players, or did they all graduate?
I still talk to a few.
There's a skip to my step as I reach my Audi. Perfect. Can you get me an introduction?
What for?
He asks suspiciously. I need models for my fashion show. I was hoping to recruit some hard bodies. He snorts in my ear.
If even one of them says yes, I expect a front row ticket to the show so I can get my heckle on.
Deal. Most of them live on the same street in Hastings, right? Elmway? Elmhurst? I remember Brenna pointing it out when we passed the neighborhood on the way home from a Briar game.
Elmhurst, he confirms. Rex's house is your best bet. He lives with a bunch of clowns who like to show off their muscles.
Perfect. I've got some time now, so I figured I'd drive over. Can you give me one of their numbers?
There's no fucking way you're going to a football house alone.
Horror drips from his every word.
Let me call one of my boys and ask them to meet you there. I was just texting with Hunter, so I know he's around.
His overprotectiveness makes me roll my eyes. But I suppose it's sweet. Fine. Tell him I'll see him in 30. But it's not Hunter's Range Rover that pulls up behind my Audi 30 minutes later. It's Fitz's beat-up sedan. My brother sent Fitz to meet me? Huh. If Dean had so much as an inkling of what Fitz and I did in the locker room this weekend, he never would have dispatched him to Elmhurst Avenue. I don't know which one of us looks more uncomfortable as we approach each other. Fitz's hands are shoved in his coat pockets, and his eyes don't quite meet mine as he says, "Hey, Dean sent me." I figured. My tone is probably harsher than necessary, but... It is absolutely necessary, Selena assures me. True. He did come in my mouth and run away.
You, had class this morning. History of fashion?
He says awkwardly. He's making small talk? Is he for real? Yes, Fitz. I had class, I say. I shift my tote to my other shoulder and march toward the driveway of the detached Victorian we've parked in front of. According to Dean, there are, like, 8 football dudes living here.
How's the essay going?
I stop in the middle of the paved drive. You mean the one you agreed to help me with? I can't help but snipe. Unhappiness clouds his expression.
I'm sorry. I know I dropped the ball. I've been
busy, I supply.
Yeah.
And don't forget about the headaches, I say sarcastically. All those terrible, terrible headaches you've been suffering from. Fitz lets out a quick breath. He lifts his hand to run it through his hair, then halts when he remembers he's wearing a Red Sox cap. Don't worry, I mutter, gulping down the bitter taste in my mouth. I've got the essay covered. We resume our walk up the driveway. His legs are longer than mine, so he shortens his strides to match my pace.
Are you sure? Did your prof approve the thesis? Give you any notes?
At the mention of Lori, I momentarily forget that I'm pissed off at Fitz. He made a few suggestions, but I was so eager to leave, I didn't fully listen to what he said. I'll read over what he wrote in the margins when I get home. Fitz studies my face. His own expression is inscrutable.
Why were you eager to leave?
Honestly? He makes me uncomfortable. A frown tightens the corners of his mouth.
In what way?
I don't know. He's very friendly, I pause. A little too friendly.
Has he tried anything?
Fitz demands. No, oh no, he hasn't, I assure him. I don't know. Maybe I'm being overly sensitive. I get a weird vibe from him, that's all.
Always trust your gut, Summer. If something feels off, it usually is.
My gut isn't exactly the most accurate barometer, I say flatly. I mean, it told me to track you down in the locker room this weekend, and look how that turned out. At the mention of what went down,